For Australians, real estate's something of a national obsession. Now, that's understandable given our home is often the biggest investment most of us will ever make. Now, I've been investing in residential real estate for almost 50 years now, and throughout those decades, there have been doomsayers, there have been scaremongers claiming the Australian property market was a bubble about to burst. Reputations have been staked on it, bets have been made on it, and the media has offered these property pessimists more than their fair share of airtime. Yet the crash never arrived, and the economic crash and the cliffs they kept telling us were going to happen last year and this year, they haven't come either. Instead, our property market's booming, and a number of capital cities are already exhibiting double-digit capital growth this year. And Australia's economic recovery, our growth's confounded most of the pessimists as we've experienced that elusive V-shaped recovery that, to be honest, very few expected. Now, while much of the commentary is about the micro-factors, what's happening on the ground in our property markets, I like to regularly get together with property commentator Pete Wargent in these big picture podcasts to look at the macroeconomic factors affecting our economy and our property markets, and that should help give you some clarity about what the future holds so you can make better investment and business decisions. So, welcome to today's podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Property markets don't operate in isolation, so I believe it's good to regularly have a look at the big picture, the macroeconomic factors affecting not just Australia's economy, but the world, and that'll help us understand what's ahead for us. But who better to discuss this with than Pete Wargent, a lifelong student of and commentator about our economy. Hello, Pete.
Hi, Michael.
Now, since we last spoke, Australia's economic recovery has continued to unfold. More jobs are being created, and our property markets have kept rising. Now, Pete, the GDP came out since we last spoke, and even though I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about that because that's old news, in fact, it was ancient news when it came out because it was for the quarter finishing in March, but the latest GDP figures did show that we enjoyed that V-shaped recovery that no one really thought. It was one of the options, but no one really thought it was going to happen.
Yeah, so that's right. So for the year to March, GDP actually increased. So we did have a big drop in the June quarter in 2020, but that's all been and gone now. And real GDP was up over the year. I think the interesting thing is, and probably most people, they don't need the ABS to tell them this. They can just tell because they've got so much cash in their pocket on average. Of course, some people have been disrupted, especially in things like hospitality. But the average household, they've got record low mortgage rates. There was all of these stimulus payments. So the household savings rate is through the roof. I think if you look at the actual technical figures, yeah, real GDP is up 1.1%, but it's actually the nominal GDP. So I don't want to get too technical, but particularly if you look at the income measures in the national accounts, very, very strong, up about 6% from a year ago. And by next quarter, because there was the big drop last year, nominal GDP could be up 12 or 13%. And that's the figure that really matters because it's an increase in real living standards and real household wealth. So that's what I think most people are experiencing. Easier mortgage repayments, a bit of cash in the pocket, and of course now rising asset prices as well.
Well, it's also meant that we didn't lose our strong rating. Standard & Poor's global ratings recently came out. We've remained on a stable footing rather than some people were concerned we'd be losing our good rating. That makes a difference in what our borrowing costs are.
Yeah, so that's an interesting one, actually, because we've obviously seen ultra cheap mortgage rates. So yes, the AAA rating is good. It's AAA stable. So very few countries in the world can make that claim. And actually on the borrowing costs point for particularly people interested in property, yes, we've seen record low mortgage rates this year. The fixed interest rates do seem to have bottomed out. So the 4 and 5 year fixed rates have just inched up a little bit. And now we're starting to see the 2 and 3 year fixed rates just a tiny little bit, just 5 and 10 basis points here and there. So it seems that probably mortgage rates and borrowing costs for the individual household have probably bottomed out. But in saying that, they're probably going to stay very low for the next few years.
Well, the Reserve Bank keeps coming out saying, no, we're not going to put up our interest rates. But the media loves speculating on what's going to happen. One of the things the media is speculating on is as the Reserve Bank pulls back its quantitative easing program to make it easier for the banks to get cheap money, that may push up interest rates.
Yeah, so there's been an extraordinary turn of events over the past year. So the term funding facility, which the banks can tap at 0.1%, that has actually facilitated or allowed the banks to lend at record low mortgage rates. That's going to get wound back at the end of June this year. So you might just start to see a very small increase in mortgage rates. But, you know, this is a big picture podcast. So the big picture is you can borrow at 2%. You know, so, you know, if it's 2 or 2.1, I don't think that's going to stop the housing market juggernaut. I think what the media is interested in is, will the Reserve Bank actually start lifting the cash rate maybe in 2024? But I think a lot of the perma bears in the property market commentary space have probably, you know, they're fixated on these tiny moves in mortgage rates. I think they're probably missing some of the bigger picture, though, and the record low mortgage rates. But also we've seen, for example, self-managed super fund lending is just starting to come back as well. So that will easily more than eclipse any tiny changes in mortgage rates over the next 2 or 3 years.
So for those who aren't familiar with what you were just saying, a lot of Australians do, after they get the correct advice, so we're not suggesting it's the right thing to do, but do borrow in their self-managed super funds to buy properties. But over the last couple of years, a lot of the banks shied away from it. It was almost impossible to get funding. I think there's only one or two lenders, but that's starting to show up again. That, I guess, shows that the banks have got an appetite for loans.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a banking royal commission in Australia 2 or 3 years ago, and all of the non-standard lending was effectively shut off. There was very little lending at the riskier end of the spectrum, or the perceived riskier end.
Perceived.
And yeah, that's right. And anyone who applied for a mortgage over that time would know it was a painful exercise, you know, line items in your bank statement being checked for $10 direct debits and so on. I mean, banks were effectively paranoid about making mistakes. Plus, we had the potential of a Labor government and Bill Shorten and Chris Bowen were promising to make life very tough for mortgage brokers and the banks. Well, that just didn't happen, of course, the May 2019 election. So I think banks are feeling a lot more confident now about writing loans. The responsible lending rules will get wound back. Also, as well, I think lending to investors on interest-only terms, well, that really has dropped. The share of loans on interest only is now at the lowest levels we've ever seen. So there's plenty of scope for banks to start lending again to investors and potentially on interest only terms as well.
Now, just finishing off on the economic data and the GDP figures that came out, it showed that the public sector was supporting our economy and the private sector bore the brunt of the COVID recession. But it now looks like businesses are starting to invest again. Business investment lifted the biggest lift in 9 years. And that's spending on building and equipment. But in my mind, that suggests that they're now going to start building inventory, which means they're going to employ people, they're going to manufacture things. And that's a good sign for our economy.
Yeah, CapEx has been in a long downtrend since about 2012, the peak of the mining boom, when investment was extremely high, record highs. I think it's only now really starting to take off again. As you said, it did actually pick up in the last quarter. But the interesting thing is that the plans for CapEx over the next year or two are now starting to show big gains as well. So the confidence is coming back. And also mining will probably start to make a comeback as well, because we've got a real surge in commodity prices as countries like China, but also the rest of the world, are looking to build back from the coronavirus recession. So the demand for materials and minerals and resources from Australia is extremely high now.
As well as that, our construction industry is doing well, obviously spurred on by all the various incentives, and that's going to help grease the wheels of industry over the next year or two as well.
The construction boom is an interesting one. So the government put in place this home builder stimulus. And we've seen for detached housing, building approvals at record highs. Not so much going on in the high-rise apartment space, because now we don't have the high volumes of Chinese investors to fund those big developments. But for detached housing, that's really taken off. And in fact, there's shortages of materials and tradies. And that's going on right across the country. It's not focused on Sydney or Melbourne. It's regional Australia, Southeast Queensland. Perth is absolutely flying on the construction front. So it's happening right across the country. And that's a good thing for the markets. And it's definitely a good thing for the economy, because we know that house building, people have to furnish their homes. It's really got a very strong multiplier effect across the economy.
Sure. Now, if you listen to the RBA, Pete, it's all about jobs right now. I guess it's fair to say it's probably always been about jobs. But at the moment, the focus is on our labour markets. Policymakers are pushing hard to get strong improvements to return to what they're saying, full employment. And they're hoping that's going to bring an end to this persistently low wages growth, which has held back our economy for decades now. The good news is that it seems that that's working. Our unemployment rates are much lower than anyone had anticipated a while ago. In fact, it got to the mid-fives a year earlier than the Reserve Bank expected. And the latest job advertising figures from the ANZ Bank are suggesting there's even more jobs out there if we could fill them. There's a bit of a skills shortage at the moment.
Yeah, and there's been a real change of rhetoric, actually. I think a lot of people who follow this stuff would recognise that in recent years, there's been a real tug of war. The Reserve Bank has been quite reticent to cut interest rates. They're worried about household debt and so on. And they've just seen the unemployment rate just painfully slowly inching downwards. Well, I think there's been a real change of focus now, and the Reserve Bank would love to see unemployment fall to 4%. So ANZ series that you mentioned there, job vacancies or job advertisements at the highest level in about 12 and a half years, really, really high. I think they're up about 220% from a year ago. So it's an incredible rebound. And ANZ expects to see unemployment below 5% by the end of this year, and probably around 4.4% or so next year. So we're going to be now targeting full employment. As you said, the good thing there is that we actually start to see wages rising, which we haven't seen a lot since the mining boom.
Well, the way that works, of course, is if you're looking for a worker and you can't find workers because there is a shortage of skilled labour, rather than paying them $25 an hour, you'll pinch somebody from a different industry and pay them $30 an hour. And that's one of the ways wages go up. That works in the big companies, Pete. That works okay in the capital cities. I'm not sure how well that's going to work in that small bakery in regional Australia that's now starting to open up again, and they're looking for a pastry cook chef. It's going to be much harder in regional areas to push to get the skilled labour.
Yeah, to an extent. I think there's a lot of hype about people fleeing the capital cities out to the regions. But I think actually, if you look a bit more closely at the figures, that's not really what's been going on. There's just been a bit less movement this year. And of course, the capital cities have seen less immigration. I think the idea that everybody's fleeing to the regions is somewhat overdone. As you said, that can be a constraint. Generally speaking, if you do get towards full employment, wages rise because they have to. And the good thing is business profits have been up double-digit rates over the past year, up 11%. So companies can actually afford to pay higher wages now, which is a good thing. It's driven partly by mining profits, but actually right across the board, we're seeing profits rising.
Now, talking about labour, recently the Grattan Institute released a report suggesting Australia's migration policy should have a different emphasis. We should be increasingly bringing in young, skilled workers rather than the government's current emphasis on more older, less skilled migrants.
Yeah, I think this is, I think for those of us in the real estate space, I mean, a lot of us generally, you know, we kind of like the idea of high rates of immigration because it creates demand for properties, there's more tenants, more construction. Generally speaking, immigration is a net positive for Australia, especially if you bring in younger migrants, because they slow the aging of the population, they increase the participation rate, so they pay tax for a very long period of time. And they boost headline GDP as well. I think the problem for a while there, particularly post-mining boom, Australia was importing anyone and everyone partly the skeptic might say to fill all of those backfill all those empty apartments that we built post to fill the mining boom hole. I think this is a good opportunity for Australia to reset its immigration policy and focus on the skills and the people that we really need, which is generally speaking those aged under 30 with higher skills. They probably paid $80,000 plus per annum. Those are probably the migrants that Australia wants. And as the Grassland Institute pointed out, that could be a $9 billion boost for the economy. I think it's about quality a bit more than quantity going forward, though. I think for a period there, infrastructure was really struggling because immigration was so quick and so high.
That makes sense. Now, just talk a bit more about the employment levels. If we feel secure about our jobs, if we feel that our wages are going up, if we're not worried we're going to lose our jobs, that's a catalyst for spending. That is an additional support for housing demand. People don't make big decisions buying houses, renovating their house, buying investment properties, buying a car, unless they feel financially secure. This is all pointing upwards for the looking forward, Pete. And as well as that, we've stashed our cash, as you said before. We've actually got big war chests, and the more comfortable we feel about our job security, the more likely we're going to spend it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, households are sitting on hundreds of billions of dollars of cash. The savings rate in the March quarter was still nearly 12%. That's extraordinarily high. So jobs confidence is important, though. And I think people are hearing the message that unemployment is going to fall towards 4%. That gives them a lot more confidence about the security of employment. So yes, it's a catalyst for spending, but it's particularly important for those big ticket items. And it definitely is supportive for housing demand. So I think that's good news. I think for a number of years, Australia, because we were targeting financial stability, the security of employment wasn't always there. But I think people are seeing the good times are starting to flow again. Interesting, the unexpected outcomes from COVID. Essentially, the government has sacrificed. It's done away with the balanced budget target and is now really pumping the economy, which is great to see after all this time.
Sure. So this has come at a cost. Our significant economic growth has come at a cost of significant borrowings, but at very, very low interest rates. It's also had another effect of the current account is in surplus. Now, I'm going to ask you to explain what that means in a sec for those who don't fully understand, but it was the eighth consecutive quarter where the current account has been in surplus. This is very different from the experiences before when we were always in deficit. And if your home account is in deficit, you know that that's not a good sum. So what does it mean for the government?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I have to confess, I never thought we would be sitting here talking about a current account surplus in Australia. Most developed countries will run current account deficits. Now, Australia back in, I think, 1971 to 1973, we had a current account surplus. But all of that time, when we had seven quarters consistently in surplus back then, all of that time we've been running a deficit. So now we're back in surplus, which I guess in shorthand means we're exporting more than we import. Now, that can be a good or bad thing, of course. If imports are very slow, that's partly that could reflect a recession or a severe downturn. But particularly in recent years, the iron ore price for Australia, well, in recent months, it's gone to about $220 a ton. That's an enormous windfall for Australia. So this is good news for the government. And in fact, the government's own budget is also much better, Nick, than we thought it would be. It's about $40 billion better than forecast, partly because of booming exports, but also jobs are booming, company profits are booming, so taxes are booming. So in effect, what it means is the government has a lot more choice and a lot more potential to continue supporting the economy until we get everything back on an even keel over the next couple of years. So not something we expected to see, but the current account has been in surplus now for 2 years.
That's interesting, isn't it? Now, part of that, of course, is China buying a lot of our minerals and particularly iron ore. And we've discussed before the potential geopolitical risks of being so dependent on that, and that China in the future is going to be buying less of our minerals. So I read an interesting article by Peter Switzer, who wrote, "Who needs China when Australia's got Tesla?" And that got me thinking. What he said was that, forget Elon Musk's loopy and weird behaviour, don't let that distract you. Tesla's a huge business, and it's not just Tesla, which is the early adopter of electric cars, but almost every car manufacturer is looking at electric cars or hybrid cars. Interesting, I drove the first hybrid car. It was a hire car when I was on the Gold Coast recently, Pete. I was actually very impressed. I've never driven a hybrid before. But apparently those batteries that they require, and Tesla in particular, has $5,000 worth of minerals and metals in it, and Australia supplies 75% of the lithium and 33% of the nickel in these Tesla cars of the future. So that's really an interesting view of what could maybe replace our iron ore in the future.
Yeah, it's been an interesting one because we've talked an awful lot about the strained relationships between Australia and China, but sometimes it's a case of watching what people do instead of what they say. And in fact, exports to China have hit a record high in the past quarter, and about a third of our merchandise exports by value going to China. I think the interesting thing for Australia is, yes, iron ore and coal have been our major merchandise exports for many years now, but it's a very mineral-rich country. I used to work in the sector many years ago, and it's always interesting that deposits don't contain just the one mineral. We've got all kinds of stuff in Australia. There's copper, gold, lithium, you name it. So Australia is quite lucky in that regard. So the demand for Australian resources will continue. And as you said, electric vehicles is the next big thing. So good news, particularly for Western Australia, I would think.
Yeah, the Australian Financial Review suggested it could actually be $1 billion worth of consumption of minerals just for Tesla. That's interesting, isn't it? So interestingly, each month when we get together and talk about the big picture, the news just seems to be getting better and better, doesn't it, Pete?
It really does. You know, you don't want to be permanently with rose-tinted glasses, but it's look at those job ads figures up 220%. We're in a position that nobody could have even dreamt of 12 months ago. As I mentioned, I think when the June quarters are finally reported, I think we'll find nominal GDP has grown by about 12 or 13%. This is genuine boom time for Australia. There's absolutely no reason now, because the government is no longer trying to balance the budget quickly, the Reserve Bank is committed to full employment. There's no big rush to change anything. We just need to hold our nerve and keep doing more of the same. I think the big question for Australia is how and when does it get to actually open or reopen its international borders? Paradoxically, the lack of immigration is one of the things that's pushing down the unemployment rate, and it's leading to wage rises. But that's the big question. At what point does the border reopen fully? And what does immigration policy look like at that point? Because there's a huge pent-up demand for living in Australia. So there's some big decisions to be made there. I imagine the focus in the short term will be on the vaccination rollout, though.
Until the vaccinations are rolled out, everyone's had their second shots, or enough of us have, I can't see the borders opening. And then, of course, it's going to depend upon to whom they're going to open, because other countries are still much further behind in their fight against COVID. But I look forward to chatting with you again next month about the big picture. Let's hope there's as much good news then as there was this month, Pete.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's funny how things play out, because you would say with no immigration, people said, oh, there'll be empty properties all around the country. And in fact, what we've seen is the rental vacancies are at record lows now. And in some areas, there's no rental stock at all. So I've said this before, I think it's going to be a very bullish part of the property cycle right the way through to 2024. And good news for property investors.
Makes sense to me. Good news. Thanks a lot, Pete.
Cheers. Pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Pete Borgent. If you want to get more information from him, he blogs daily on Blogspot. Just do a Google search for Pete Borgent Blogspot, or you can subscribe to his Low Rates, High Return podcast that he does with Stephen Moriarty, where he talks more about managing your money and the stock market. Of course, we regularly run his blogs on Property Update as well. Now, in a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you, but I've got another bonus for you. I've got a bundle of ebooks and reports. Just go to podcastbonus.com.au and I've got a bundle of books for you, just as my way of saying thank you for subscribing to my podcast. Now, if you don't already subscribe, or they don't use the word subscribe anymore, follow, why don't you, where you're listening to this, just click the follow button so that you get these regular sessions twice a week. I'll be sharing my mindset message in a moment, but before I do, I think it's probably worth pointing out that with the economy doing as well as Pete and I just discussed, with our property markets moving forward, many people are going to do really well. But if history repeats itself, and it certainly will, a lot of property investors just won't get the financial freedom they deserve. Many will sell up their first property, about 50% do. Most won't get past one or two properties. We know 92% of investors don't. But if you want to be in that group who do, if you're looking for direction, guidance, so that you can get above average results, wealth producing rates of return, why not have a chat with my team at Metropole? We don't sell property. We help beginners get into the property market, experienced investors grow their portfolio, and sophisticated investors manufacture growth through property renovations and development. So we'll help you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth. Go to metropole.com.au. Find out about our range of services, which all starts with putting a strategic plan together for you. Planning is bringing your future into the present so you can do something about it. You'll know what you can do, what's realistic, or what you have to do to get to where you want to go. metropole.com.au. I look forward to being part of your ongoing wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In today's mindset message, I want to talk about the power of motivational quotes. And in a moment, I'm going to share two quotes with you that I think will be very powerful. Well, I hope so, because they've been powerful and useful for me. But let's go back a step. Believe it or not, some of the most popular blogs on my Property Update website are the motivational, the inspirational quotes. I found that inspirational quotes have been one of the reasons for the success of many people. Reading motivational quotes, inspirational quotes on a regular basis, sometimes on a daily basis, has been reported time and time again to boost a person's motivation, of course, but also to help them take action towards what they want. Now, why would this be the case? Well, first of all, they do give you a quick boost in motivation. Reading something inspirational can help improve your life by giving you a quick pick-me-up immediately after reading it. You're instantly going to feel happier, more motivated, inspired after reading the right quote. This, in turn, is going to help you to get the energy that you need to get going again to move towards your goals. So that's one reason quotes work. The other is they can pick you up from a slump. If you're feeling down, if you're feeling depressed, sometimes there's nothing better than reading an inspirational quote or two. So if you're in that frame of mind, go to my Property Update website and have a look at the regular inspirational quotes that are there. Often they're going to just help you feel a bit better, help you kick away the blues, and there's millions of them on the internet, not hard to find. Quotes sometimes also help cure procrastination. That's one of the toughest things many people have to deal with. Sometimes reading a few inspirational quotes when you're having trouble getting motivated is the quickest, best way to beat procrastination, to get going again. And as I said, there's almost unlimited number of them around, so not too hard to find. But today I'd like to share two with you and see what they do to you. The first one is, perfectionism magnifies your mistakes and minimizes your progress. The harder you try to be perfect, the less likely you're going to accomplish your goals. Let me say that again. Perfectionism magnifies your mistakes and minimizes your progress. The harder you try to be perfect, the less likely you're going to accomplish your goals. So what this says to me is that perfectionism is one of the chief enemies of progress in life, in work. So my message to you today is, don't let perfect get in the way of good. Trying to make something perfect actually prevents you from making it just good. Perfection is the elusive glory. It's a bit like a unicorn. Sure, it sounds great, but who's actually seen one? I'd rather ride a real horse than wait for an imagined unicorn. So if you can't achieve perfection, don't sweat it. Just go for good instead. Now, the second quote I want to share with you today is from Greek philosopher Epictetus. I think that's how you pronounce his name. And he was born a slave. And he had his teachings written down by one of his pupils. And he said, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. Now, what this means to me is whether it's in property investment or your job, profession, a skill, or just general knowledge, to improve yourself is to learn. But you can't learn if you believe there's nothing left for you to learn. What if what you know is only one of the many possibilities and there may be some others, some better ones? What if what you know could further be enhanced by other things that you just don't know yet? Actually, what if what you think you know isn't so and it's wrong? I mean, that's one of the things that stops a lot of investors, a lot of success people achieving success. It's not what they don't know. It's what they think they know that isn't so. So if you don't show humility and approach all things as an empty, willing vessel to learn, you're not going to grow. Never assume that your mind's full or what you know overpowers what others know. After all, how could progress have been made in any field if everyone assumed they already knew everything and it wasn't worth learning anything new? It's arrogant, it's foolish, and even for those at the top of their field, it's not the way to think. So what can you take away from this? No matter what you're looking for in life, keep yourself hungry to learn. Choose to always have a beginner's mind, constantly looking for another angle. Get comfortable with being wrong. In fact, relish when it happens. It's okay to be wrong as long as you make it a lesson. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to seem like an amateur and not know it. An open mind can be your greatest asset if you let it. We're stubborn creatures, aren't we? We'd always like to assume we're smarter or more capable than others. But hoping you're superior actually makes you inferior. So ditch the ego and accept your place as an eternal student. Besides, no one likes a know-it-all. And the true experts are the ones who are going to admit when they don't know something. Why? Because they like to learn. So I started off by explaining that motivational quotes are helpful. How do these quotes strike you? How might you apply them to good effect in your life? I hope you got some benefit from this week's mindset message. I hope you got some benefit from my chat with Pete Wargent in my monthly Big Picture podcast. If you did, why not share it with somebody who you think would also benefit from it? Just tell them about the Michael Yardney podcast. Twice a week, I bring you this type of information from a variety of experts and once a month with Pete Wargent. Of course, you can catch me in between these podcasts on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney. Or I have a private Facebook group where every day I leave a snippet of some information, charts, commentary, information I don't leave elsewhere that will help you. Just look on Facebook for the Property Update private Facebook group, and I'd love to share that information with you as well. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?